From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruryak. Four states hold their Republican primaries tomorrow: Indiana, North Carolina, Ohio, and West Virginia. A total of 11 will be held this month, including one in Oregon. California's primary, you might know, is June 5th. Nevada's is June 12th. Let's start with all this primary talk. And the political junkie, Ken Rudin, is joining me by phone, as he does almost every week, to talk politics. Hello, Ken.
Good morning, Beth.
So, all these votes, maybe even after tomorrow's primaries, Ken, we're going to learn something about the impact of the Trump presidency. How clear do you think the picture will be?
I think what we're going to learn after the primaries is less about the Trump presidency and more about the Republican Party. And I say that because, you know, we keep reading about how that, you know, the Trump numbers are bad, and that how Democrats are enthused and more anxious to go to the polls, and Republicans are kind of worried. But if you look at the primaries, especially in these Senate primaries, and especially in places like West Virginia and Indiana, which have two major Senate primaries tomorrow, the candidates seem to be outdoing each other about loyalty and fealty to President Trump. They're saying that Republicans should vote for them because they are more likely to follow the path of Trump, and which seems to fly in the face of all the things we hear about Republicans nervous about what awaits them in November.
North Carolina might be the least eventful tomorrow, but let's talk about Ohio for a moment because of the Governor John Kasich, who so many people know across the country, who wasn't long ago here in California joining Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in trying to remake the Republican Party.
Well, look, John Kasich obviously ran for president in 2016. He won Ohio and nothing else, but he still thinks that's enough for him to consider running again in 2020. He's been a Trump critic from day one. He's never signed on to the president. And so he is trying to remake the Republican Party, similar to the way Arnold Schwarzenegger tried to remake it in California. Remember, the Republican Party seemed down and out in California for years, especially in the aftermath of Pete Wilson and the alleged anti-immigration moves that he took as governor in the 1990s. Kasich is trying to do the same thing in Ohio and nationwide, but the successors to him, again, the big battle in the Republican primary between the Attorney General Mike DeWine and Kasich's Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, also about who supports Donald Trump even more. If you look at their commercials, it's like, you know, you always see Trump's name invoked. And that's different than what Kasich and Schwarzenegger and other Republicans are trying to do in remake their party.
So, Ken, the California Republicans held their state convention over the weekend. Did you follow that at all? Were there any highlights for you?
First of all, I've been reading, as we all have, there's been a national narrative about California in the fall in that there are so many, because of Democratic enthusiasm, there are so many Democrats running, and because it's one of those all candidates run on the same ballot, like a jungle primary, where all ballot candidates are on the same ballot. Regardless of party, go on in November. A lot of Democrats are fearing that if you have six Democrats or 10 Democrats running in one House race and one Republican, the Republican has a better chance of making it to the runoff. But what I came out of watching the state convention and reading about it is that, think of, even though Schwarzenegger was elected and reelected, it doesn't look like a Republican is going to make it to the final, the gubernatorial primary in the battle to succeed Jerry Brown, or in the Senate race where Dianne Feinstein is up for another term. And for state, it's very embarrassing. Humiliating, I would think, for the Republican Party, given what they used to be. And you think of, Ronald Reagan and George Duke Magian and Pete Wilson and Richard Nixon even. And now there is no Democrat, no Republican who seems likely to make it, to the finals for governor and senator. And that's just shows how far the Republican Party has fallen.
Tomorrow, there is a gubernatorial debate here in the state, and we're going to hear more about the weekend convention from Ben Adler. So there'll be a lot of talk focused here, even though it's not a primary yet for a couple of weeks. We're going to have much more conversation about whether a Republican can figure at all in the governor's race. So we'll pick up on that.
Can I just interrupt for one? you know, a lot of people saying, well, you know, it's Donald Trump. But the Republican Party has been kind of in trouble in California for a long time. Schwarzenegger may have rescued it temporarily, but we shouldn't be blaming this on Donald Trump, even though Trump lost California by 4 million votes to Hillary Clinton in 2016, and which is a remarkable amount. But but the Republican Party seems to have lost its way well before Trump, and I'm not sure if they found it yet. They are desperate to hold on to House seats, as we know, but governors, senators, statewide offices seems to be out of their reach right now.
I want to throw a topic at you that I know that you won't expect me to be talking about, but I did read a piece about John McCain over the weekend, and in the New York Times profile, there's a lot of discussion about people traveling to spend some time with John McCain, even to the extent that he's making plans for his own passing and still battling his brain cancer. I want to get your thoughts, because we've talked about this before, but not for a very long time, and there seems to be a sort of political and friendship pilgrimage happening.
You know, it's very emotional reading it, and I've read every word about that, too. Obviously, Joe Biden were among the most recent to visit John McCain out in Arizona. Jeff Flake, the retiring Republican senator, spent time with John and Cindy McCain, a week or so ago in Arizona. It's remarkable because, you know, there's been so many different John McCains. There was the John McCain, the maverick, who ran against George W. Bush in 2000. There was the party regular who ran for president in 2008, almost renouncing all the things he said about immigration because he wanted to hold off conservatives in his bid for the nomination. So, and we saw him, you know, sometimes he would embrace President Trump. For the most part, he would be very critical of Trump. Sometimes he would vote against Trump's initiatives, like extending bid to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And other times he would vote in favor of Donald Trump's initiatives. So there's been a lot of, you know, back and forth about how people feel about him. But I think in seemingly saying goodbye to John McCain, in John McCain seemingly saying goodbye to us, there seems to be the decency and the goodness and the courage of John McCain that many of us have seen over the last bunch of decades, ever since he was first elected to Congress in 1982. It seems to be coming more pronounced than ever before by just saying, look, I don't want Trump at my funeral. I want Vice President Pence to be there at the National Cathedral. He is not backing down from how he sees Trump running the country, let alone the party. And it's sad to say goodbye. Any kind of public goodbye is terribly sad, as we saw with Ted Kennedy. Mm. But I think it's especially sad now because not only is he reminding us of the courage he has faced in his life, especially given what he suffered when he was imprisoned in North Vietnam, but also watching what's happened to his party and what's happened to his country. And he could just, you know, fade away and just, you know, disappear, but he's refusing to do that, even in what may be his last weeks or months. And there's something very poignant and touching about all of this.
You're listening to Ken Rudin, the political junkie. By contrast, I'm going to move us into a part of the conversation that focused all the political headlines this week around two comments, one from Rudy Giuliani, the newest member of President Trump's legal team, and then the follow-up comment from the president. Originally, Giuliani had said that the president reimbursed his attorney, Michael Cohen, for a hush payment to Stormy Daniels just before the 2016 election. And then the president said Giuliani will get his facts straight, that he's a great guy. So what about all of this and all the attention that's being paid to it, Ken?
Well, you know something, there is very much a Donald Trump in Rudy Giuliani in the fact that he often talks, I hate to say he talks without thinking, but he certainly talks with unscripted, let's say
freestyle.
It that way.
He's a freestyle speaker.
You know, I'm sorry?
He's a freestyle speaker. That's
the
word.
He is a freestyle speaker. But of course, he has to remember he's not the president of the United States. It's one thing for the president, President Trump, to speak unscripted. But when you're working for the president and then go on Hannity and say something that Trump has denied in the past, that's not good. So you kind of wonder all the things that Giuliani's doing. I mean, he's been on TV nonstop since last Wednesday night when he talked to Hannity. And of course, he was on ABC's This Week yesterday. And he's talked about, you know, the money that was given to Michael Cohen and whether this violates campaign finance laws. And, you know, you make a good point. When Trump came out the next day or after last Wednesday and said he needs to get his facts straight, well, you know, I mean, as Giuliani himself said, well, you know something, I'm just learning this. I have about half the information. If you have about half the information, you don't go on national TV and just start opening up. I mean, I know Rudy likes to be Rudy, just like Donald likes to be Donald. Mm-hmm. But you don't, if you're defending the president in what could be a very serious battle to save his job, you don't go on and say things that may, you know, upend a legal strategy. And Rudy doesn't seem to learn that lesson.
Well, I think just for the record, the president said Giuliani will get his facts straight, which is different than needs to get his facts straight. There's a difference in the words there. But anyway, there was
I thought he really said needs to get his facts straight.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we have to fact check ourselves again, Ken. You know, that happens.
Yeah, Beth, you and I need to get our facts straight. Okay?
Meanwhile, the attorney for Stormy Daniels, Michael Avenatti, had a comment about all of this conversation surrounding this point about the payment. Here's a little from him.
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I think it's just another absurdity that's being trotted out for the American people to deflect away from the facts.
So Chuck Todd asked Michael Avenatti, are you trying to win a case or are you trying to take down a president? And he said, we're trying to win a case and we're trying to present facts and evidence to the American people. This is a search for the truth. Which leads me then to more of the conversation that happened over the weekend. Let's listen to Rudy Giuliani talking with George Stephanopoulos on ABC.
The president does acknowledge meeting Stormy Daniels, correct?
Gee, I'm not really involved in the Daniels thing, so I don't know. I mean, he denies that it happened. She has written a letter denying it.
Well, we do have a picture of them together. So the president.
Well, it depends on what you mean by met her, right? Right.
Well, yeah, there's the picture right there. I just want to get that fact on the table.
Well, it looks like my friend Donald Trump before he was president, but that looks like the woman who was on Saturday Night Live last night.
That's right. But
now that's pretty interesting. I think she kind of. God, if I were her lawyer, I'd be very upset. Fame and fortune, let me make money. How is she damaged? She's become rich as a result of this. $130,000 doesn't mean anything. Boy, I wish that was my case.
So the president does deny any sexual relationship with Stormy Daniels?
He has. I have not. I'm not, as I said, I'm not involved in that. But the reality is he denies it. She denied it. Then when it was opportunistic, right before the election, she came forward, and then, of course, the whole thing happened with Michael Cohen. And it's history now because it wasn't a campaign anything.
There's just simply something about Rudy Giuliani's cadence and the way the words kind of explode out that just on that alone, you kind of turn your head and pay attention, right?
I mean, right now, I'm not involved. And yet he offers his 2 cents and sometimes his 2 cents. I don't know why they allow him to go on TV unscripted without any plan. You know, some people say, well, this is part of a master strategy between Trump and Giuliani. But I don't see any master plan at all. And for Giuliani to say, you know, depending on what you mean by the words, met her. I mean, that's obviously a reference to Bill Clinton, depending on what the word is. But then again, if you're equating Clinton, who is seen as a serial philanderer by the Trump people, if you're comparing Clinton to Trump, well, then you're defeating your own purpose by saying that Trump is no different than Bill Clinton. It's just very bizarre. And you know, I mean, look, the fact that we saw Stormy Daniels on Saturday Night Live, and it's funny to hear Rudy Giuliani criticize her for that when everybody remembers Giuliani a few years ago appearing in drag on Saturday
right.
Night Live. The whole thing,
right.
I think reality is Saturday Night Live, and we're just all players in it.
Well, it is supposed to be a search for the truth, remember? And I'd like to think that at some point we're really going to know the real truth. But meanwhile, we did have Kellyanne Conway on a number of shows, and she was kind of walking back or turning around Rudy Giuliani's comments. We're going to hear her here talking about the fact that President Trump had been asked whether he knew about the payment, something that reporters continually played over the last day or so. This goes back to the president saying no on Air Force One.
When he said no on Air Force One last month, he's talking about when the payment occurred, that he was not aware of the payment to Ms. Daniels when the payment occurred. And that is consistent with his tweets from a couple of days ago, where in those three tweets, the president had a lot to say about this matter. He says that this was a private matter, had nothing to do with campaign funds, that there is an NDA in full force and effect. He believes that Ms. Daniels and her lawyer have violated. That may go to arbitration. He also repeats that this is a false claim. And he also says that Michael Cohen had basically discretion authority to use funds that had nothing to do with the campaign, how he saw fit as his attorney at that time.
That was Kellyanne talking on CBS's Face the Nation. When she was on CNN's State of the Union, she added, "The president denies the affair. I have no reason to believe otherwise." Wow. She had a very busy weekend because of this topic. And Ken, wasn't this also a weekend that otherwise might have been about the pending summit with North Korea or the president's appearance at the NRA convention or maybe even his new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo?
No, we should not be talking about North Korea, and we should not be talking about the impending Iran renegotiation, because those are serious topics. Those are life and death. We are focusing, and I'm not criticizing us for doing this, but I'm criticizing.
Well, is it us?
Well, no. I mean, look. I mean, I don't know what we could say about North Korea, but we just have to watch what happens. And of course, Donald Trump has a May 12th deadline, whether he wants to renegotiate the Iran nuclear deal or not. And that is, I mean, that's life and death situations. But it's remarkable how the whole thing is about often about Kellyanne Conway, who can defend the president probably better than the president could defend himself. And I watched her twice with Jake Tapper on CNN, and she was very good. But then she'll defend President Trump, saying, well, you know, three Americans are being held by North Korea because of Obama. And then Jake Tapper will say, wait a second, two of the three were taken when Trump was president. And so it was a lying tweet by the president. And then Kellyanne Conway's response was, yes, but the unemployment rate is under 3.9%. I mean, she's an amazing deflector. She's an amazing defender. But sometimes the reality you get from people defending the White House and the things that Trump tweets and says is just remarkable. And so you could have Kellyanne Conway on every show in the world. And I'm not sure if after Kellyanne Conway and Rudy Giuliani, I don't know if you learned anything after it's all said and done. It's just that I feel like I've just been taken for a spin, and I'm still dizzy. My head is still spinning.
Well, here's a point that is reason that it's not just the media, and that is that Kellyanne Conway, I don't believe, was scheduled to appear on all those shows because of a pending summit with North Korea.
No, of course not.
Or because of a new Secretary of State. You know, she comes out and all the appearances are made because of a tweet and a comment and a misstatement. Anyway, we could spend a lot of time here. There is the serious matter of Robert Mueller's Russia investigation and the tone on that, and now whether the president might take the fifth or comply.
Isn't that so? And look, I'm not blaming the media for having Kellyanne Conway on or to talk about things other than North Korea.
No, I just asked the question. Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying that listening to these defense and the fact that we're talking, as Giuliani casually said, that the president could take the Fifth Amendment, given what the president himself said in 2016 about the Fifth Amendment, that only the mob does it, and it's crooked Hillary's people who are taking the Fifth Amendment. You only take the Fifth Amendment if you have something to hide. And now we see Michael Cohen is talking about taking the Fifth Amendment. Giuliani suggesting the president takes the Fifth Amendment. It's like we have a short memory span and we don't remember the opposite of what President Trump said just a few short years ago. It's mind-numbing.
I am going to spend about 1 minute more with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Later this morning, we're going to hear from the First Lady. She's going to announce her platform, expected to be a set of initiatives for children. And Ken, we did not get to the story last week about Speaker of the House Paul Ryan firing the House chaplain. If I don't get to it right now, it's going to be done and over with. And it was such an odd story that something has to be said about it. What's your take on what happened?
Okay, I'll talk very fast, as I always do. Patrick Conroy is 7 years has been the House chaplain. He was apparently fired by Paul Ryan because during a morning prayer, he talked about the tax bill. And he said, well, there should not be winners and losers, that everybody should benefit. And a lot of conservative Republicans thought that that was crossing the line. It was criticizing the tax bill. So they pushed him out. And then, to make matters worse, some conservative Republicans said, well, we need a House chaplain who has a family, who has adult children. And because he's a Jesuit priest, he's a Catholic who practiced celibacy, there were a lot of people who thought that attacking him for not having children means that it was an anti-Catholic thing. So Paul Ryan got into this whole controversy he wished he hadn't gotten into. Conroy rescinded his resignation. Paul Ryan took him back, and hopefully for them, the matter has been swept under the rug. But it was really embarrassing the way they handled it, and doesn't say much about Paul Ryan's leadership in this.
Well, maybe you forgive, but you don't forget, right? That's history.
Well, yes, and yes, and next week there'll be new things that we'll talk about, and we'll forget about everything that happened this week. That's what happens in this crazy day and age of ours.
Thank you, Ken. Always a pleasure.
See you, Beth.
That is Ken Rudin. He is the political junkie, and you're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.